Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll find out what's new at the Minnesota Humanities Center and learn about the basics of PTSD. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Military children play an important role in the life of a military family. They give our service members encouragement, love, and hope for the future. They're a special group, and in times of separation from their military parent, they have a unique set of challenges. We've learned over the years that one of the best ways to nurture and empower our military children is by connecting them with others in the same situation. They might be the only one in their school with a parent in the military, but there are others going through the same things across the state. This month, more than 200 National Guard youth are spending a week at Camp Ripley, making friends with other military kids. In addition to learning some military traditions like marching, calling cadence, and retiring the American flag, the youth, ages 10 to 15, will experience a week jam-packed with fun. They'll complete an Army obstacle course, learn archery, shoot on the rifle range, ride in military vehicles, go canoeing and swimming, and have plenty of campfire time. But besides just being fun, one of the goals of the camp is to assist them in gaining an understanding of why their Guard member serves in our National Guard. The idea for a youth education program for the Minnesota National Guard was first established in 1988. By 1991, the first annual camp welcomed 100 kids and 35 volunteers. Since that time, the youth camp program has developed into a nonprofit organization led by a board of directors and have connected hundreds and hundreds of children and volunteers. Make sure your military youth takes part in camp this summer. Registration is open. Find out more about this and other youth programs at beyondtheyellowribbon.org.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Joining me now to talk about the Minnesota Humanities Center is the Veterans Voices Program Officer, Trista Matacastillo. Trista, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, sir. I'm excited to be here with you.
Well, it's not often that we get a Navy, Marine, Army National Guard veteran in the studio, but tell me about your career in the military. You started out in the Navy?
I did. I started out enlisted in the Navy at 17 years old. I grew up in Little Falls, Minnesota, so it was my way to see the world, and so I enlisted in the Navy as an avionics technician working on F-18s.
And how long were you in the Navy?
So just over 7 years, and then I got picked up for a commissioning program from the Navy called Boost, and so I went off to my school at Boost in Newport, Rhode Island, and then while I was there is when I switched over to the Marine Corps.
Now, we'll see now. Usually the Navy's hauling the Marine Corps around, but you were in the Navy for 7 years, enlisted, NCO, went into an officer training program, and ended up in the Marine Corps.
That's right. I was ready for another challenge.
You must have been ready. Yeah, now you're Marine Corps through and through.
You know, once you're a Marine, that's it. It's in your blood.
And a proud veteran.
That very much so. Very much so.
Tell us about your career in the Marine Corps.
Yeah, so I served 4 years. I was in a program that was enlisted a commissioning program and an ROTC scholarship. So I went to the University of Minnesota. It was a lot of training, you know, just like any other ROTC student. And so I was involved there at the U of M and attended school actually at St. Thomas Crosstown School while I was in the Marine Corps. I went to OCS and graduated Marine OCS at Quantico, Virginia. And then just before commissioning, because of personal family situation, I switched over to the Army National Guard.
And so then you became an officer in the Army National Guard?
I did. And the Army National Guard liked me so much that they sent me back to OCS again.
Two times through.
That's it. I'm a very well-trained person.
You must have aced it out the second time.
I definitely aced it the second time.
And how long did you serve in the Minnesota Army National Guard?
So just over 5 years, almost 6 years in the Minnesota National Guard.
So let's see now, 7 years in the Navy and was it 4 years in the Marine Corps?
Yeah, about three. So I have a total of 16 and a half years in.
Okay, but if you had to retire today, is it Marine Corps?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was coming.
I'm always, once a Marine, always a Marine.
And a proud veteran, and I understand that you were personally involved in the recent legislation to get a special license plate in Minnesota.
Yes, I worked really hard along with a really large, great team of women veterans and other supporters of women veterans. So there are a lot of guy veterans involved as well, and we passed legislation to get the first ever women veterans license plate in the state of Minnesota.
And you told me an interesting story. Who got the first one with all the zeros on it?
Betty Strofis. You know, the whole way along, you know, she was the first woman fighter pilot, you know, in World War II. And so we, as women veterans, well, we have lots of women to look up to, but my favorite is Betty. And so we saved that first plate for Betty. And the interesting thing, too, is that the plate itself was designed by a woman veteran, Angie Patika, who is an outstanding young woman veteran who also was a Veterans Voices awardee a couple years ago.
And if our listeners want to hear a really fun interview, just go to the MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and type in Betty Strofis up in the search, and She is just full of energy
for
a World War II veteran. She's incredible, isn't she?
She is incredible.
This is Minnesota Military Radio, and we're speaking to the Veterans Voices Program Director from the Minnesota Humanities Center, Trista Mata Castillo. Trista, military, went through that career, and the next thing I understand, you worked for Habitat for Humanity.
I did. I worked there right when I left the Army. They were gracious enough to hire me and give me my first real civilian job, and they were wonderful, and it's a great organization.
How did you get to the Minnesota Humanities Center?
So I had actually been volunteering with the Minnesota Humanities Center and serving on an advisory board to create their veterans program. And on our first September 11th event was kind of the kickoff. And after being involved for a couple years, I really found a heartfelt fit at the Humanities Center and the work that they were doing around veterans. And so when they asked me to come on board, it was a perfect fit for me.
For our listeners that may not know, the Minnesota Humanities Center is over in St. Paul, but can you tell us what's their mission? What are they doing?
Yeah, so the Humanities Center's mission really uniquely is about connecting voices or people with stories that aren't part of the dominant narrative all the time and really connecting those communities with others. And so it's about community. It's about solutions within community, but really raising the status. And so that's the perfect fit for our veterans program because so often, you know, as veterans, we're depicted as either superheroes or social problems. And being a veteran myself, there's been a few times I've bumped up on the edges of those two definitions, but really most of my life is lived in the middle in a very different way. And so our goal really is about how do we complete the narrative of what people think someone in the military is or a veteran is, and that we are leading productive lives, that we have all kinds of things to contribute, and we're your neighbors.
And the Humanities Center has been around for quite a while, hasn't it?
We're coming up almost on our 50th anniversary.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I was over there visiting last year, but we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah.
So you were a great volunteer, and they decided when they were going to push this program, we know who to hire.
That's right. Or they couldn't shake me, one or the other.
Uh-oh, the Marine Corps held on.
That's it.
they knew they were going to lose that fight, and they gave up.
Exactly. And, you know, I told them, but I tell every organization that says we want to work with veterans, we want to do something for veterans. And I always say, well, the first thing is you got to hire one first.
Were you the first veteran?
We have one other on staff, Bob, who is a Vietnam era veteran, and he's been there for a long time doing maintenance, but I was the first veteran in programming.
Mm-hmm. And a Marine. They've got their hands full, don't they?
Yes, they do.
veterans programs. You couldn't have written a better script, could you?
No.
A position?
It's perfect. And it doesn't hurt that it's about 9 blocks away from home.
9 blocks away. Let's see. Navy, Marine, Army, veterans programs. It doesn't get any better.
Exactly.
Well, Trista, we're going to have to take a break here in just a few seconds, but we want to talk about today some exhibits and a program that I know is near and dear to your heart, Veterans Voices Program. Can you give us just 30 seconds? What is that?
Yeah, the Veterans Voices Program really is, like I said, about how do we complete the narrative and how do we highlight those veterans giving back to their communities so that people get to know who we really are and what that military culture and veteran culture looks like and where we come from.
And so you put together a program to do that.
That's right.
When we come back from a break, we're going to dig into that program and tell our listeners all about it, how they can participate, and how they can put up some nominees for next year.
Absolutely.
So this is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back with our proud veteran, Trista Mata Castillo, in just a few moments. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been talking to the Veterans Voices Program Officer from the Minnesota Humanities Center, Trista Matta-Castile. I knew I was going to mess that up sooner or later, but I'm doing pretty good on that, Matta-Castile. Tell your husband thank you.
I will.
And she's a proud veteran, was in the Navy and the Marine Corps and the Minnesota Army National Guard, and served for many, many years, proud veteran, and has maybe the job of her life.
That's it.
One that's really wanted.
That's right.
Working over at the Minnesota Humanities Center, working on Veterans Voices, and there is a Veterans Voices program.
Right.
Tell me about that. Where did it come from? When did it start?
Yeah. So a few years ago, we have on our board of directors, the Minnesota Humanities Center is a nonprofit organization commissioned by the state. On our board, we have several veterans now, but we had two a few years ago. And one of the veterans who's in the Minnesota National Guard, she said, you know, we're talking about all these populations and communities that their voices aren't heard. What about the veteran? And so she kind of issued a challenge to the Humanities Center and said, you know, where are veterans in all of this? And so they started calling together veterans and said, you know, is there a need? Is there something, you know, is there a gap? Is there a need? Should we be doing something? And overwhelmingly, the answer was yes. And what the Humanities Center does, unlike any other organization, we're not a social service, we're not providing a service. What we're doing is we gather people together from community to make deep, meaningful connections, to really understand each other in a new way and who we are. And so out of that grew the Veterans Voices program, which really is about how do we complete the narrative? How do we reach each other in community? You know, with only 1% or less of us who have served in the military, you know, we can easily be ignored, right, in society. And so people don't know. They don't know the questions to ask. I don't know what to say. They don't think they know a veteran. And so we're kind of breaking down those barriers to meet in community and have conversations and ask questions and go deeper. And so we do that through lots of different ways, and the program really encompasses all the ways that we do it.
Well, in society, after we get out of uniform and right. We go back into civilian society, most of us don't have veterans tattooed across their forehead. Of course, Marines might have a little tattoo or something.
But that's right.
It's hard to tell who's a veteran and who isn't.
That's right.
And part of your program was to recognize what veterans have done since they got out of the service.
Absolutely.
And how they continued serving our country. Is that right?
Yes. That is our September 11th Veterans Voices Award Ceremony. And so we're going on to our third year now. And it really was our launching point to the Veterans Voices program at the Humanities Center. And what we thought is, you know, for a while, when we first started, it was when unemployment was at its highest. We know we have a huge suicide rate among veterans. And we still have civilian counterparts that, one, don't realize that we still have troops under harm's way, right? We still have them downrange. They don't know that we have people still fighting. They don't know the number that we have lost and the impact in their community, because it's so easy to be the other. And so we thought this is a great way for people to start paying attention to the veterans around them. And so we started our first year recognizing 25 veterans under the age of 40 that were doing really awesome things in their community. So people were paying attention to what a veteran is and what they have to contribute, which starts to shift that story of we're all broken a little bit. And that doesn't take away from those that are. It just also recognizes that, one, is that if someone is struggling, there's hope, because there are veterans that are demonstrating that they're making it. And it might be someone they served with. But at the same time, it's also shifting the attitude about what society thinks of us. And so we're now on our third year, where people all over the state of Minnesota nominate veterans that they know that are doing great things. And then a selection committee of fellow veterans, previous year's awardees, now select those new group of awardees. We added a second category, which you're familiar with, Tom.
The old guys, the girls.
Well, it's interesting is that I'm now in that category too, and so I'm rethinking the name of the legacy veteran category. So we have on the rise and legacy.
Is that a nice way for saying old?
I'm resisting the old term the way. We are leaving a legacy. And so we have those two categories, and folks are nominating veterans, and we have had a tremendous outpouring of nominations and really super high caliber veterans. So it's really exciting.
We're speaking with Trista Matta-Castile, the Veterans Voices Program Director from Minnesota Humanities Center on Minnesota Military Radio. Trista, you mentioned that a lot of people in society think that the troops come back and they're all damaged.
Mm-hmm.
We come back and we're all changed.
Yes.
But we had one of the doctors from the VA Medical Center on the show a while back, and they studied the largest group of Minnesota National Guard soldiers that were deployed and came back. And they found out that 7% of them had some kind of issue that they could deal with and help with. But that also meant that 93% of them came back just fine.
Exactly.
And back into society and working hard and doing good things. And I like to say it's pretty easy to show up and put in a full day's work when nobody's shooting at you and bombs aren't going off.
And, but so often people don't get that. I was in a meeting earlier today with a partner and of an event that we're working on, and the conversation says, well, you know, what happens if in the audience someone gets triggered and there's some explosive reaction? And I'm like, that's not going to happen.
That's not the norm, is it?
It's not going to happen. It's all, you know, it's just not going to happen. It's not reality. And so how do we change those things so that those who do need help can get it and the rest of us can continue on in prospering?
And in this program, the Veterans Voices program, you found some extraordinary people in the Twin Cities that are continuing to do some great things, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But not just the Twin Cities, across the whole state. And so many of our awardees are staying connected with the Humanity Center. They're going on, they're becoming teachers, or they're working with the education curriculum. One of the things that we did, another piece of legislation, was that we declared October Veterans Voices Month. And this is a nonpartisan issue. A couple of our awardees actually came up with the idea and said, we need schools to understand what does it mean to be a veteran in a different way. And so we declared October Veterans Voices Month. It's in law forever. And we have developed curriculum that will be launched in Minnesota high schools this fall. And we worked veterans and teachers, and some of them were teachers who are veterans, worked together to develop this curriculum. And it will be piloted this fall. All in Minnesota schools.
Now, Trista, we just got a few minutes left, but in September, you've got another award ceremony coming.
Yeah, we sure do. September 11th is our award ceremony. It's in the evening. It'll be hosted by the University of St. Thomas, St. Paul campus. Anybody wants to come or wants more information, they can look us up on our website, MNHUM.org, and look up the VETS program, learn all about our programs, but really get connected and see what that ceremony is, and to start thinking about veterans in their community so that they can nominate for next year, because this is going to go on forever, and it's been a really huge success.
And how many people will be getting awards this year?
25 awardees this year as well.
From both the legacy and today?
So it's a total of 25. Okay. The selection committee just met, so the public hasn't released the names yet because we're doing our background work. And right now it'll come out in August, the official announcements. But it's looking, there are 9 legacy folks and 16 on the rise this year.
Okay, so we found 9 old folks to go with those young people that are doing extraordinary things.
That's right.
We just got a couple of minutes left. I know that the Humanity Center is sponsoring a Minnesota tour of the display, Always Lost, The Meditation of War, and it's an exhibit. What is it, and where can people see it?
Yeah, so our the exhibit is a living memorial to everyone who has died since 9/11. It, the center of the exhibit that was created by Western Nevada College is specialist Noah Pierce, who died by suicide after his second tour. But the exhibit really encompasses the whole look and can visually, for folks, visually see the real impact of war and the effects on service members. And it is a 2x2 picture of everyone who has died. And it, obviously, it's still growing, and so it gets added to. And it's on tour. It's been across most of the state of Minnesota. We have still 3 more host sites. It's coming up in at Metro State University, and then it's at Northland Community College right now in Thief River Falls, so they still have some time to get there, and then heading down to South Central Community College in Faribault by the end of the summer. So it's a great place, and they can find all that information on our website. But it's an opportunity. It's one more tool to create a space to have a conversation.
So if they want information on the exhibit, Always Lost, The Meditation on War, they can go to MNHUM.org. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, we've just got about a minute left. Veterans Voices, you've got that filled for this year. You know the names, and you won't share them with
me. I'm not telling yet, but check back in August, and you'll get them all. And let me tell you, there were 75 nominations that came in this year. Some people had numerous nominations, and it was the most impressive pool of awardees I have ever seen, and I'm really glad I was not on the selection committee because I couldn't have chosen. They were amazing, every one of them. All of our veterans deserve to be recognized because the truth is that they're still serving.
Hey, Trista Monacastillo, a proud veteran and the program Veteran Voices Program Officer for the Minnesota Humanities Center. Just a few seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Semper Fi, Tom.
I should have known. We got the Marines in the studio. Trista, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
It was Trista Monacastillo, the Veterans Voices Program Officer for the Minnesota Humanities Center. Please stay with us. In a moment, we'll learn about the basics of PTSD. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to learn about the basics of PTSD. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
Please consider driving home your support for Minnesota military members, veterans, and their families by purchasing a Support Our Troops license plate for your car or motorcycle. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, together with the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, will use your annual minimum contribution of $30 for the betterment of military families and homeless and underserved veterans across the state. Deployments and military service can put a strain on families, their finances, and their health. Here's how your donation helps Minnesota military veterans and families. Benefits Corps, which provides family counseling with specialty services available to children, financial counseling, debt management, and mental health counseling. It also provides emergency financial assistance, as well as grants through our Support Our Troops program. Helping homeless veterans secure shelter and access to benefits. Provides outreach to diverse communities across Minnesota, helping provide veterans with access to the benefits they have earned. And provides community seminars on health conditions associated with military service. To purchase Support Our Troops plates, visit your local Department of Motor Vehicles or call 651-4-TROOPS. Support Our Troops plates are also available from dealerships. Be sure to ask about Support Our Troops plates when you purchase your next new or used vehicle.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Dr. Chris Urbis is a clinical psychologist at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center and an associate professor at the University of Minnesota. He does clinical care and research. And he's joined us today so that we can talk about the current state of treatment for PTSD. Dr. Urbis, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Doctor, how does one start if they want to have a career doing a study in PTSD? What type of training did you have to get into this field?
Oh, well, in my case, I'm a clinical psychologist, so I studied basic clinical psychology and treatment of mental health issues for 4 years at Texas Tech. Did an internship at a VA and started to learn about PTSD in veterans there. Did a postdoc here at the Minneapolis VA after that, and then kind of went from there.
So how many years have you been at it, sir?
Well, since that postdoc, I've got about, oh, let's see, it's 12 years now at the Minneapolis VA.
And you've seen lots of patients over that time, I'll bet.
I have, yes.
Now, how you started at the VA, as you said, and you've kind of stayed there. Is that because there's plenty of work and plenty of people to help?
Yeah, there's a lot of really great things about being at the VA. One, of course, is working with the veterans and working with people who have served their country and really a great group of people. Another thing is if you're interested in working with trauma, which is kind of what got me into the field, the VA's got some of the best treatments available. It has some of the best research available. To my mind, it's probably one of the best places to be if you want to study or work with things like post-traumatic stress disorder, because there's such a huge amount of resources and attention and expertise and really a devotion to learning about and treating this condition.
Now, Doctor, I'm a Vietnam veteran, and my father was in World War II, and back in World War II, they used terms like shell shock and battle fatigue and those kind of things. And I don't remember when I came back from Vietnam the term PTSD. It's an acronym for post-traumatic stress. Mm-hmm. When did they name it that, and what changed to cause that?
Well, they started using the term PTSD in 1980, and that's when the American Psychiatric Association put the term PTSD into what's called the DSM, which is kind of the catalog of mental disorders. And they did that in part in response to the Vietnam vets who were coming back and having a lot of problems, and people didn't really know what was going on. And so a lot of people got together, they started doing some studies, started doing some treatment, they realized that there's kind of this set of problems that are happening together, and that came to be called post-traumatic stress disorder.
Doctor, I can remember that when some of my buddies came back from Vietnam, if they wanted to stay in the service, that we just kind of decided we weren't going to talk about any issues. We were going to try to act as normal as possible so that we could continue careers.
Sure.
And I would imagine that that probably exacerbated some of those problems that they might have had because they were just pushing them away and not dealing with the problems. Would that be correct?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's very likely. One of the things that makes PTSD happen is the person is confronted by something that's really horrifying. It kind of a world-shattering kind of experience. And when they're confronted by that, if they don't have a chance to kind of process that, to think it through and kind of make some sense of it, make some meaning around it, that can kind of make PTSD symptoms stay around. And so instead of kind of recovering from the trauma, which a lot of people do, they kind of get stuck. And when they get stuck, that's post-traumatic stress disorder. So if you're not able to talk about it, if you have to kind of hide it or push it in the background and never talk about it with anybody, that might make it a little bit more likely that you might end up with those kinds of symptoms.
Now, Doctor, you and your colleagues have been studying this for decades, and are there actual good treatment methodologies available to help people deal with it and move on with their lives?
Yeah, that's the good news. The good news is that there are a number of treatments for post-traumatic stress disorder that are what we call evidence-based. And so an evidence-based treatment is a treatment that has been studied across a number of different medical centers, lots and lots of people, and they found that it actually does work. And so at the Minneapolis VA, for example, we have a number of evidence-based treatments for PTSD. And, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing. Everybody's a little bit different. And so when somebody comes in, we're absolutely going to offer those evidence-based treatments. If it turns out that those don't work for you or it's not, you know, just not an option for you in some way, then we'll work with you to find some other way to do it.
What would be you get a veteran that comes in and they were a combat veteran and they've seen their buddies blown up or something happened, some, as you say, traumatic incident that they experienced. What would be the typical treatment and how long would it take to deal with those issues so that they can move forward?
Well, first thing that's going to happen is you're going to walk in and you're going to meet with a mental health professional who's going to spend some time getting to know you. So they're going to ask you a lot of questions about your background. They're going to ask you about what happened to you in that event, but also just about your life in general, because nobody is just their trauma. You know, nobody is just that one bad thing. And then they're going to talk with you about treatment options because they're not going to just say, you must do this. They're going to present you a couple different options. You can think through what fits for you and what doesn't. So let's say you went into one of these evidence-based protocols we're talking about, such as prolonged exposure. If you went into that, then what you do is you sit down with a counselor and you would recount to that counselor what it was that happened to you. And you would do it in a very real, very vivid way. And as you're doing that, what you're doing is you're processing that traumatic memory and you're getting a chance to kind of do some of that work that you didn't do way back when, that you didn't get to do right after the trauma, and you're doing it now. And you would do this over a number of sessions with the therapist.
So you kind of take it out and look at it and deal with it head on?
Exactly. It's kind of like it's been in the back closet the whole time, and you bring it out of the closet and you put a spotlight on it and you really look at it. But you're not doing it by yourself. You're doing it with a professional who's there with you to kind of help you out, to support you as you're doing it. And as you do that, at first it's very tough, but after time the symptoms fade and you can have really good results with that technique. And so that's one example of a treatment that you could do.
Now, Doctor, do you see some of our veterans that have tried to deal with it themselves and dealt with it unsuccessfully, and then they have the issue of PTSD maybe manifest itself in erratic behavior or drugs or alcohol, those type of things?
Absolutely. And one of the things that you sometimes see when someone's dealing with PTSD on their own is they're looking for they're kind of desperate for some way to feel okay or to feel normal or feel better. And unfortunately, a lot of times you see people turn to drugs or alcohol as a way of doing it. And it's self-medication. You know, so I'm feeling so upset, I'm feeling so nervous, I'm feeling so freaked out. And if I just drink enough, then I feel calmer. Maybe that's the only time I can sleep. And it makes sense to do that in a way. You know, it's a person trying to feel better, which we're all about. We want them to feel better. Unfortunately, drugs or alcohol have a lot of side effects. And, you know, a lot of disruption, a lot of problems. And so we'd much rather people come in and talk with us and let us help them out so they don't have to use those things in order to feel okay.
So unfortunately, I suppose the drug and alcohol cause other problems, and that's what delivers them out to you. And you say, okay, what's really the underlying problem here? Is it something that you haven't dealt with in the past?
Exactly, exactly.
So that can take sometimes, I would guess, quite a while to get that all cleared up and talked about and dealt with.
It can, although it's very interesting. Sometimes you work with someone for years, and I have veterans I've been working with for years. Other times you got someone come in, they've had PTSD a long time, and maybe after, you know, 8 or 9 sessions, 2 months, 2.5 months, they're feeling better. And it just varies a lot from patient to patient.
So is that because they start to gain an understanding of what they're thinking and how they're dealing with it and learn how to do it a different way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're learning new ways to think about it. They're also learning not to hide from it, you know, not to avoid it or push it away. You know, when they have the memories, don't run away from them. Just kind of take them head on. They're learning that they don't have to be kind of chased around by those memories anymore.
Nothing to be embarrassed about. Let's just take it out and deal with it and put it behind us and move on with our life and do something good.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Doctor, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the current state of treatment for PTSD. We're talking to Dr. Chris Urbis, who is a clinical psychologist at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In this segment, we've been talking to Dr. Chris Urbis, who is a clinical psychologist at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center and an associate professor at the University of Minnesota. And we've been talking about the current state of treatment for PTSD. And doctor, if you once again, could you just share with our listeners, what is PTSD?
PTSD stands for post-traumatic stress disorder. And it's a condition people have when they're confronted by a really horrifying experience or event. And that experience or event kind of comes back to haunt them. It doesn't fade into the background like things normally do. It stays with them. So they're reliving it in some way, and it might be nightmares. It might be flashbacks. It might just be thinking about it a lot. They're avoiding it whenever they can. And it just causes a lot of misery when those symptoms are present.
So this could be something like being in a car accident or witnessing a murder or going to war.
Exactly.
So it can affect civilians and veterans alike, and PTSD could be something that you might suffer from and you don't even tie it to a specific thing, but something's caused you to be less than normal.
Right, right. I mean, typically someone with PTSD, they'll know something's bothering them, and they'll know what that something is. They may not know it's PTSD. They may not know that that's the name of what's bothering them. But typically you'll be reliving something. You know, it'll be on your mind, or, you know, either while you're awake or while you're asleep, but somehow or other, that thing that happened won't leave you alone. And if that's the way you're feeling, that could be post-traumatic stress.
And the good news is that through research and all the things you've done for decades in the VA hospital and other doctors have done, there are treatments, there are ways to help resolve whatever the underlying issue is that's causing the problems.
Exactly. There are a number of treatments, and we were talking about some of them. They're what are called evidence-based treatments that are well-studied. They're treatments that we know can indeed help and really reduce PTSD symptoms, sometimes relatively rapidly. Sometimes over the course of just a few months, people can feel substantially better.
So if you're one of our listeners out there, and if you're suffering from some type of a problem like that, or your spouse or someone you know is, reach out and get help, because the medical community knows what to do.
Yeah, we've got a lot of practice at this, a lot of experience at it. VA, in my opinion, is one of the absolute best places to get treatment for post-traumatic stress, for trauma-related conditions. This has been our lives for years and years and years. We really have worked very hard on this.
And you've actually had the opportunity to study a lot of patients and share some of what you've learned with the rest of the medical community.
Indeed. One of the things that we do at the Minneapolis VA, and really throughout VA, we do a lot of research. And that research is really designed to figure out how can we better help out veterans and how can we understand what's going on. So locally, we've done a lot of studies in collaboration with the Minnesota Guard, who's been just phenomenal to work with, looking at what kind of predicts who struggles after a combat deployment and who does okay. What predicts who really ends up with PTSD symptoms, and what predicts who really just kind of manages to go through that and be just fine throughout their life afterwards.
And we've had some of your colleagues on that have studied some of the Red Bulls when they've been deployed, and what they've reported to us on this show was that about 7% of those that came back on that particular deployment suffered from some sort of a problem that we could help them deal with. But the good news was 93% of them came back and they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
It may have been changed because of the deployment, but they came back and they were just fine and went back into society and did things. So it's a small percentage that have an issue.
It's a small percentage, but it's a very important percentage. You know, it's that point you just made, 93% not suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder is fabulous. And it really shows how resilient, how strong people can be. And of course, people with PTSD are also very strong. You have to be strong to suffer from things like that and continue on.
And carry on with life.
Exactly.
A doctor, as I indicated before, I'm a Vietnam veteran. And a lot of my buddies back, you know, 40 years ago came back, and a few of them, that I've seen, you know, went to college, got married, had kids, had a great career, and were seemingly fine. And now the last few years they've retired mm-hmm. and maybe got some time on their hand, a reflection, reflecting on life's experiences. And some of them are having, the old demons are coming back. They're having problems with things that they experienced in Vietnam that they've never had problems with.
That can really be confusing for people too, because as you said, you know, they've had this really successful life. They've been doing great. And now all of a sudden it feels like things are falling apart. And yeah, we see that a lot. What seems to happen is when people come back from a war, they've got a number of different ways to deal with things. And one way to deal with those things is just to get super busy at work, super involved, get very involved with your career, with your family, and just, you know, kind of charge forward. And that works really well, but you don't have time when you're doing that to kind of deal with what happened. And so then you retire from your job. You got nothing on your hands but time. And so all these things that you didn't really get to deal with before, now they're back on your mind. And as that happens, you may well develop PTSD symptoms that you haven't had for years and years and years. And again, the good news for that is we can help with that, that it, there's treatment for that. And if that's going on, come in and see us.
So you've seen this over the last decade or so?
I can't tell you how many times, many, many times.
So it's more common than we think.
Yeah. Some of my first cases, you know, 10, 12 years ago when I was back at VA, it was Vietnam vets, exactly the situation you're describing. Highly successful people, they retired, and they're trying to figure out what's going on now.
It's got to be really disturbing. You've had a pretty good life. You think you've put that all behind you, and then all of a sudden you've got time and you're thinking about it. But I would guess that maybe they shoved those experiences in the back of their mind and refused to think about it and never took it out and hit it head on and dealt with it and put it away. Is that true?
Exactly. It's kind of like you got it locked up in a closet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the way you keep it locked up in that closet is by staying super busy and super focused. And as long as you can stay super busy and super focused, you're fine. But if you retire, you lose your job, something else happens, you're not able to do what you have been before, you can't keep it locked up anymore. And then boom, it jumps out and starts eating at you. And then, yeah, that's very confusing for people because they're feeling like, hey, what's wrong with me now? And sometimes they feel like, well, if I was going to have a problem with it, I should have had a problem 20 years ago. I should have had a problem 30 years ago. But at that time, again, they had this way of keeping it locked up. And that was working for them then. It's not working for them now.
But the good news is if you know somebody that's going through that, you know how to help them.
We have some great ways to help people, and we're very determined to do it. So come on in and let us help you out.
Doctor, we just got a few seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners about PTSD and the treatments available and all the great work you're doing out at the VA Medical Center?
You know, I don't want to be too cliche, but I just want to say thanks to all our veterans for everything they've done. And one of the things you learn when you're working with PTSD is the amazing sacrifices people make for us. And so I very much appreciate that, and I want to say thank you for that.
Doctor, thanks for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Chris Urbis from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center on the show today to talk about the current state of treatment for PTSD. Joining me now is David Anderson, the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. David, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Tom. Hope you're having a good afternoon.
We're learning a lot of stuff, as we do every week, and this week we want to talk about metals replacement. Do you have a lot of veterans show up on your door and say, I used to have 6 or 7 or 10 medals, and I can't find them, and how do I get them?
Yeah, you know, a person would think that this would probably be a request you wouldn't get that often, but you get that quite a bit. You know, a veteran leaves the service, maybe he has a girlfriend at the time that thinks the medals are cool, and they hand them to her, or, you know, they give them to their folks, and their folks move away, and or they even just get packed away, and they can never find them again, or, you know, if a house burns down or something like that, all that stuff is lost, and all of a sudden, they don't have their medals anymore.
Are there certain types of medals that can be replaced?
Yes, any United States issued medal can be replaced. Some of the, you know, like the Vietnam campaign medals, Desert Shield, Desert Storm campaign medals, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan medals, those all can be replaced. Some of the medals are a little bit harder to find, like, you know, any of them issued during World War II for, like, from France or, you know, different countries like that. Those are the ones that you know, are a little bit tougher to replace.
So I'm guessing that since we're talking about medals and the time in the military, there's probably a form you have to use to do this.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the metal replacement form is the same as the form you use to request a DD-214. It is called the Standard Form 180. What you'll do is you'll fill out a Standard Form 180, put in all the information, and then you'll go ahead and mail that off, usually to National Personnel Records Center. What they will do is they will process it, and then you'll see the medals, and this is the government now, so it'll probably take anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks. And when they show up, they come in a very nondescript box with your address on it, and they're, you know, and they're in there.
So your county veteran service officer can help with this now. Who can request the replacement medals? Just the veteran, or can the families do it too?
No, if the veteran is still with us, they want the veteran to go ahead and request the medals. But if the veteran passes away, any family member can go ahead and request the medals. You know, if there is no immediate family members or anything like that, you know, possibly a cousin or, you know, a sister or something like that, but usually spouses or children. And the medals replacement is only once in a lifetime. So if you request your father's medals, and then you lose them, and then you go back to National Personnel Records Center, unfortunately, they're not going to provide you another set.
So one time, is there a cost to this?
No. Usually, there's not a cost for the veteran or immediate family members. Some of the associated longer-distance relatives, there may be some fees. But I've been doing this since 2006, and I haven't heard of anybody having to pay a cost yet. So
once again, the moral of this story when we're talking about anything veteran is get your veteran, get your DD-214, your discharge certificate, and go visit your county veteran service officer.
You're 100% correct there, Tom.
All right, David, appreciate you calling and talking to us this month, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you. That was David Anderson, the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. We're just about out of time, but we have one announcement today. Many of you heard about No Barriers Warriors on our program last year, a nonprofit that serves wounded warriors through outdoor experiences. Please join No Barriers on August 8th for a day of challenge and inspiration at Fort Snelling Base Camp that includes rock climbing, ropes courses, and team building exercises. For learn more at nobarrierschallenge.org. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Trista Matta-Castillo, Dr. Chris Urbis, David Anderson, Commissioner Larry Shelleteau of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about the Tribal Veterans Service Officer Program here in Minnesota. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.